The medium is the message, body makes a dance. Love is the product, the joke is in, the joke is in, the joke is in your face.
I'm Are You Serious? And this is my show. Welcome once again to the Are You Serious Show, a production of MondoGlobo.net. For those attuned to that thing some call the occult, there's been theosophy, there has been magic with a K, or maybe with some K, there's been neo-paganism and chaos magic. Our guests today, Jason Louvre and Chris Arkenberg, are part of a new generation of magicians, and they'll be with us today to talk about Jason's book, Generation Hex, and about ultra culture. Before I welcome my co-hosts, I want to let you know that our website at areyouseriousradio.com now takes audio comments. So if you've got something to say about what you hear and you have a microphone of some sort going into your computer, go to the site, click on any button that says send me an audio. If you're clever or witty enough, we'll play it on a future show, and maybe we'll even respond, and what a thrill that will be. And we've got a huge clusterfuck gangbang of people here to carry on a shockingly brief conversation. And yeah. Jeff Thiel is there. Chris Arkenberg, one of our guests, is hanging out with us for this segment of the show. The inevitable Steve Robles is here. I see Sherry Miller glancing through a Generation Hex book, and perhaps she'll speak up. And last, but of course not least, our friend, the lovely and talented Diana Brown.
I feel like I'm going to go on and sell something on a home shopping channel now, but it is great to be here. And actually, South Carolina seems to be selling something. What's in a name? They have a new name for inmates soon to be in South Carolina, and I think that's going to be expatriates, because South Carolina has proposed a bill. It's the author of this bill is Ralph Davenport, Representative Ralph Davenport, and he has a new general bill. It's Bill H-4865. It was introduced to the House on March 21st, 2006. And if it goes through, it will enable the Department of Corrections of South Carolina to enter into, and this is where it gets nice and vague, agreements with foreign countries for the confinement of inmates convicted of drug-related offenses or sexual abuse to children, because apparently they're equal crimes in the eyes of the author of this bill.
Of course.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the question, of course, is, you know, A, where do they send them to?
Exactly.
B, who wants to take criminals? And most importantly, who wants to take anybody from South Carolina?
I think that's going to be their first, you know, problem at the toll booth, is that it's South Carolina.
Yeah, pot-smoking, child-molesting South Carolinian. Although maybe that's a little bit redundant.
Careful, Grandma. There's a crack lab in the basement. All right.
Now, Fidel Castro did this to the United States, actually.
Oh, sent him to Cuba.
He just sent them in like cigar boxes.
Right, he took all the worst criminals
in Cuba on arrival.
Reassembled.
Well, you know, it's this word agreement that I'm just sticking on, because it's very vague, and it's like, okay, the agreement is we send you so many drug dealers in, what do we get in return?
Some sort of barter system.
I'm wondering.
Yeah. We get the drugs.
They're going to the West Indies, to a little island. It's going to be a penal colony.
Maybe there's a country that wants the sex perverts.
Maybe,
you know, they're starved for, they don't have enough perversity going
Holland.
On in their society.
Amsterdam is, I think, always
running out.
Amsterdam is looking for a new drug, because frankly, it's all been done. What I think is interesting is that Representative Ralph Davenport is the, and I read this on Boing Boing, is the same individual that proposed a law outlawing sex toys in South Carolina.
He's a little uptight, I think.
Just a touch. Just a little afraid of...
A little high-strung.
Well, maybe
so
he needs a new drug.
Mean when these guys leave South Carolina, they'll have suitcases full of sex toys?
That's it. They're going to ship them off with the inmates. And that's actually a form of rehabilitation for these guys.
Maybe now, they can send them to the same country that the countries that we send the Al-Qaeda people to, and they can be tortured.
Yeah, we're going to send them all to Guantanamo, and then eventually the president's plane is going to crash on Guantanamo, and then we're going to have to send Kurt Russell in with an eye patch to save him from
Liskin.
Yeah, from Chef from South Park.
And with the sex toys, everyone will be anally probed.
All right, we've got Jason Louvre, editor of the new disinformation book, Generation Hex, on the phone from New York City. And we have Chris Arkenberg here in the studio. He's a contributor to the book and also involved in various magical workings. And so, Jason, tell us about the idea of ultraculture. Is this the next step after chaos magic? Oh, actually, first, maybe you better tell our audience what chaos magic is. So
okay, well, hi, and thanks for having me on. It's a big,
sure.
It's a big okay, well, let me see. Where do I start with that? Chaos magic. Okay, well, I guess when most people think about magic, the first thing they probably think about, if they're not thinking about stage magic, is Aleister Crowley, who was kind of the first person to modernize magic. And if you go back about 100 years, or a little bit more than 100 years, you get kind of Theosophy, Madame Blavatsky, and the Golden Dawn, and kind of the idea that there was, you know, one true way to do magic based around the Kabbalah, and there wasn't much of any other game in town. So if you go back to Crowley was the first person to kind of modernize magic and throw in a lot of Eastern techniques that were just coming into Western consciousness, and Buddhist techniques, Hindu techniques, and he kind of took the Golden Dawn system and threw in a lot of his own, not only kind of his own personality and spin on things, but a lot of his own research and scholarship. Chaos magic happened in the 70s, moving on from Crowley. It happened kind of on the tail end of the occult revival in the 60s. And chaos magic was kind of the post-modernization of magic, which cut it up, if you will, and took it even farther from Crowley, and kind of declared that there were no rules to doing magic whatsoever, and kind of reduced it, in my opinion, overly reduced it to a set of simple formulas that basically said magic is all you need to do effective magic is an effective magical link, which means something that represents your goal, and trance, the techniques of trance, and putting yourself in an altered state of consciousness, whatever that might be, through drugs or sex or fasting or meditation. There's a million different ways. And on top of that, everything was left up to the individual creativity of the practitioners. So that's chaos magic. And let's see.
Ultraculture, the next step. You tell us what the next step is.
Okay. Well, my personal take on chaos magic is I think it was incredibly important for its time, and it was a great cultural movement. But like I mentioned earlier, I think that it kind of threw out the baby with the bathwater, and in my opinion, that baby was the context of what these things were. Why do these things at all, anyways? And if you go back to Crowley and the Golden Dawn, the context was usually individual power. Some kind of like individual dominance over the world. And, that context kind of got tossed out a little bit. And I would like to replace that with I think that what we're seeing right now is a new context, which is resituating those technologies in, asking the question, now that these technologies are available and a lot of people know about them, they're all over the internet, what do we do with them? And I think that's resituate them within the community and use them to hopefully dig ourselves out of this mess that we've gotten the world into. And ultraculture is, it's just a word that I came up with to connote that, saying, well, why don't we actually apply these technologies to culture and and apply them to how we live our lives and the people around us.
Are you trying to get away from the old word occult? And also, you call the book Generation Hex. So, I mean, is there a generational rebellion aspect to this? I mean, it's kind of like, you know, Crowley is an old fart. The Discordians are old farts. Wilson is an old fart. We're all old farts. And you know, we need a new generation of young farts to come in and stir things up. Is there an aspect of that to calling the book Generation Hex? It's young people, right?
Well, it's definitely young people. All the people in the book are under, I think, under the age of 35. To be honest, actually, no, I don't think there's a generational rebellion aspect to it, which might be surprising. But, you know, I was definitely playing into that idea when I put the book together, when I called it Generation Hex, and in some of the marketing for it, because I think that's what people were expecting to see. So I happily played into that. But I think if you read the essays in the book, you see a real firm, in a lot of those essays, you see a real firm grounding in tradition and looking to the past for guidance. And I think one of the things with ultra culture is, you know, we're kind of going back through the 20th century and beyond, looking at all these, you know, looking at all the ideas that came out of the counterculture, looking at things, you know, magical ideas, Crowley, Wilhelm Reich, Burroughs, Geisen, the cut-up, you know, every, you know, the countercultural legacy of the 20th century, and, you know, saying, can we actually form all these ideas into kind of almost a cohesive science and move forward with it.
Let's really jump all the way into the meat of the matter here. And Chris, you're also welcome to respond to this as well. Which is basically, I mean, a few weeks ago we had a militant atheist on the show, and we all got together and we smashed Easter. Easter is destroyed. We got rid of it forever.
Finally.
You know, we finally got rid of that Jesus thing.
Rabbits
and so here, I mean, here's this book full of magic spells and spirits and angels and invocations. And so why should our atheist friends believe any of this?
Well, one of the, actually going back to chaos magic, one of the more salient points that the authors of chaos magic made was that magic doesn't depend on belief. You can practice magic as an atheist. And it will still work. So you can practice it from the context of a religion or anything, really, and it'll still work. So why should an atheist practice magic? Well, to get results, and I can't say anything more than, you know, they're welcome to try it and make a scientific experiment out of it and see what happens. And, you know, there shouldn't be an element to magic that's kind of proselytizing for belief. It should really be, all you can really say, I think, with that stuff is, you know, everyone's welcome to try it for themselves and make their own conclusion.
So I think I might disagree on the belief aspect, but I think addressing somebody like a hardcore atheist or a hardcore rationalist, materialist, to me what magic, which is a very broad term and probably one we should disabuse ourselves of because labels tend to limit things. But I think in the Western world, especially the modern world, there's a lack of meaning. Belief or not belief, whatever, people want to try and get a little bit more than just a mechanical explanation of, you know, reducing love to hormones and chemical imbalances. They want something that appeals to them, and this has traditionally been kind of the realm of religion. Something like Easter or Christ or all of these sort of rituals, really what they're trying to do is, at the core, offer some meaning, some path to people, some context for living in the world, which really often at times does appear to be meaningless and random and chaotic mm-hmm. and mechanistic. So this is an opportunity, or the tools within the magical canon are potential paths to find some context, to find some meaning, to understand that, you know, you're not just alone in the world, that there are things you can find in it.
Well, I mean, the tendency is for the human brain to look for patterns and to look for meaning, and then perhaps a paradigm comes along to tell us that no, basically everything is, you know, sort of came out of nowhere, which could well be true. But again, though, I mean, if I'm sitting back and I'm basically agnostic on this, and you know, I dig magic and played around with it, and I could interpret some of the things that happened as having been results of myself performing a ritual, or else I could just say, you know, I really tried very hard to get that girl. You know, she didn't just pop out of nowhere. I, you know, had to do some work. So I could say, you know, it worked.
Too magic your wife.
It worked or it didn't work. It can be a matter of interpretation. But I think like one of the dangers or one of the things that people worry about, particularly now, when you're trying to argue against the irrationalism of apocalyptic right-wing Christian philosophy and extreme Islam, and you know, I don't know if you know that the Louis Farrakhan says he was taken aboard a spaceship where he was given the word of Islam by the deceased Elijah Muhammad, and I guess I mean
anally.
Probably.
The word probe didn't
one,
come up.
One hopes. I mean, anal probes are part of the trip here. I guess he derailed me. Should I?
Getting your religion up the ass.
Should I believe?
Belief suppository.
Should I believe Farrakhan? I mean, where do we find a ground to argue with the stuff that we find absurd, if we allow for the existence of spirits and angels and stuff like
well,
that?
Well, one of the more important things that Crowley said, and I don't think it was said in the context of anal probes, but it might well have been.
I think Crowley had no problem with anal probes. To his credit, he was a man of many probes.
Right. one of the things Crowley said is you know, you can, you know, he definitely had the attitude of the scientist. One thing that people tend to overlook with him, but he said, you know, you can't really say anything about magic other than if you do certain things will happen, and it, you know, can be extremely bizarre, and you can generate peak experiences, you can generate, you know, utter low experiences. It can be extremely bizarre in the moment, but you know, especially as time goes on and you look back on it with hindsight, like some of the things you were talking about, you can't really say much about it other than, well, you know, I did an experiment and something happened. And he said, you know, the danger is attributing objective reality to it. That's the one thing.
Well, have either of you had something like happen to you that seemed like it couldn't possibly have happened other than by the means of magic?
Absolutely. But I would preface that my sort of introduction or calling into magic, it's more of a shamanism, and what it was born of was a lot of these type of experiences, a lot of experiences that really broke the mold of what the world is supposed to do in most situations. And I think everybody, regardless of whether they have magical or non-magical inclinations, at some point in their life has an experience or two that kind of wakes them up, and it's just unexpected. For me, it happened to coalesce around a lot of psychedelic use, going to dead shows, going to raves, being in these really profound communal experiences, group experiences that would accrete this large volume of synchronicities and telepathic experiences, these sort of things that aren't supposed to happen. And this is, you know, while sober and while tripping, and this whole sort of continuum of going into this phase of, you know, a couple years of experiences just swirling and swirling. And in that sort of chaos of breaking the mold of rationalism, I started to reach out to these other maps, these other models, you know, myths, magic, philosophy, Buddhism, all these different ways that maybe in times are better at explaining personal phenomenon than just physics and biology and sociology.
Isn't what we're talking about, though, kind of a mysticism divorced of these traditional mythologies without that kind of dogma that's attached to them?
Without the dogma, certainly. And slightly jumping back to what Aryeh was saying, I think there's, you know, maybe a difference between belief and dogma. And dogma is really the, you know, a major problem, and that's where you see things like, you know, Islamic fundamentalism, Christian fundamentalism, and scientific fundamentalism. Yeah, people that are stuck in their belief and want to enforce that belief on everybody else.
Of course, you're really saying it's question everything we know more than...
Well, yeah, and what works for you? And for me, you know, I had a strong affinity for the Egyptian pantheon. I was raised Catholic and, you know, cut that out completely, but then later tried to embrace the symbolism to some degree and find, you know, the meaning and the depth in that that was real to me, as well as, you know, Eastern Tibetan Buddhism, some of the deifications that are common in there. So it's embracing the myths because they have things to say. They have important lessons to the individual, as Joseph Campbell spoke to, you know, to a large degree, but not getting caught up in the dogma, not feeling like you have to prove it or it has to be real.
I can't seem to get away from the buggering of young boys. That's
and we're back.
Louis Farrakhan was not so young. Much.
Nor was Crowley when
it's okay.
No, but it sounds to me, actually, what Jason said earlier is that the Generation Hex idea or the ultraculture idea, what Steve was talking about, the getting rid of all myth and so it sounds more like chaos magic. It seems like maybe the early occult systems are like the thesis and chaos magic is the antithesis and this would be the synthesis. I'm just thinking of Hegel getting buggered, I guess.
That sounds like a good way to put it. But I want to make an important distinction here and maybe to clarify the discussion a little bit. I think that magic, as we're talking about, I would only define magic as a set of techniques you can use to cause change in reality. And mysticism is how you attribute meaning to what's happened in the wake of that. If that makes sense.
So what did the techniques look like? Because I think a lot of people who are listening who, you know, in their heads, you know, images of Harry Potter or, you know, David Blaine or something. I mean, what? Give us a concrete...
Doug Henning.
Amazing Kreskin.
you know, all the other cheesy jokes. But one of you guys give us a concrete look at, you know, a technique or a ritual? What does it look like?
I think there's a whole spectrum of how to look at that question. On one end, you've got the idea that every single thing, every action you take, is a magical action, and when you're
an assertion of will, you mean, sort of thing.
Exactly, an assertion of will, and when you're kind of living in the slipstream of when you're on the right path, and you're able to line up every single action you're taking to get where you need to go, then every action becomes a magical action. And, you know, something Genesis George would point out was that, you know, the modern magician uses the tools of their time. So, you know...
But, you know, there are non-mystical schools of thought that sound very similar to that, you know, like maybe a Max Stirner or an Ayn Rand who worship, you know, the individual free will without resorting to mysticism.
Sure. Well, I mean, that's one end of the spectrum. I think the difference between that and Ayn Rand would be that that doesn't occur in a vacuum. That still recognizes that individuals have kind of like, you know, true wills or paths ordained for them. It doesn't rule out the idea of a higher reality.
Well, and I would.
You guys do rituals, actually, though. I mean, you do which right, actually right, right. Maybe what we should do is
you
break
doo doo.
Yeah, doo doo. Yeah. The whole anal thing is coming up. There must be some
That's
kind of
Crowley spirit.
Invocation.
Will.
But anyway, I think maybe what we should do is stop for a moment for some music, and Jeff Deal will pick out a song that will alter the meaning of everything that we're doing, and then we'll come back and talk again.
Serious.
Serious. We're back, and speaking of rituals, Chris, you tried to put a love spell on Fox News so that it would become an outlet of truth and freedom. And I don't know, I'm not seeing it, but tell us about the ritual and what you did and how you feel about the results.
So briefly, before that, there was a recent article, I believe it's on...
Can you lean into the mic?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, thanks.
There was a recent article, I believe it ended up on Accuracy in Media, AIM.org, which noted that many conservatives are actually becoming increasingly dissatisfied with Fox's tendencies toward a liberal bias. And this was in the last 4 or 5 months or so. So, you know,
you mean like anti-Bush.
I think if you're responsible for the way the right wing is cracking up, then we've got a lot to thank you for.
So,
what was your working that made this happen?
So, well, the working was...
Actually, maybe start off, I asked you to bring, to read letters that you wrote to Fox. Maybe read the first letter that you wrote to Fox News.
I can certainly do that. Dearest Fox, like a warm embrace, my love wraps around you. Remember when we held hands and danced together through the dewy meadow morning, cool and alive? I can't stop thinking of you. It's like you're part of me now, like we're nestled together, sharing our mother's womb, bathed in warm, saline love. Do you still think of me? Ever yours, 23. That was the initial one.
I think that might have done it to them, actually.
Okay. Yeah. So obviously that is, you know, fairly poetic and meant to be an actual sort of loving embrace of this entity. The ritual itself was... let me say that magic, in large part, is theatrics. It's... This is, for me, where belief enters in. It's a temporary suspension of your own identity, throwing yourself completely. A good actor can convey this other world to the audience. Magic, Crowley used to say, inflame thyself. And so dive into it, believe it's real for that moment. So for me, this involved entering into what was a 33-day ritual that essentially involved a lot of breath work and meditation, you know, listening only to Hari Prasad flute ragas, listening to tapes of the Dalai Lama, reading Tibetan Buddhism. I started every day with a banishing ritual and invocation rituals, which are fairly strict to kind of the stuff that Crowley was doing. Then I would turn on Fox News and try and sort of get into that space of relating to this entity, which, if you think of Fox News, sure, there's the corporation, there's the show, but there's this massive amount of shared information that is distributed across all of the people that are watching it, all of the people that are presenting it, the people that are constructing it and delivering it. And it's really, you can think of it as this massive sort of etheric presence mm-hmm. that's distributed yeah. through everybody involved in it. And if you're not watching Fox News, it's still there. If you turn off the TV, it's still resident in the minds of all these people that are, you know, making it happen and receiving it. And so my idea was to characterize this as what is referred to as an egregore. And this is a term that basically says that this entity has identity, it has agency, it exists above and beyond just the material foundation, so,
right.
so that you can engage that on some psychic level. And so that's what I would do, is I would get into this very receptive kind of trance state and then watch Fox News and try and sort of reach out, in a sense, into the media, into this collective etheric space. Television is a one-way street.
Yeah. Did it ever make you feel like icky?
Oh, yeah. I mean, after a couple weeks of the working, at first, this was my love letter. It was me like, Fox, I love you. I don't want to hurt you. I want you to be happy, this sort of idea, you know.
That was incredibly open.
Well, that's the thing. You become very receptive. And after a while, as is detailed in the book, it became very caustic.
Did they try to get a restraining order?
They did not, but I had all sorts of odd little experiences of, you know, people trying to run me off the road and getting sick at inopportune times.
So what's wrong with Fox News? What's wrong with the neocons? Give me the moral imperative that says that those guys are wrong. I mean, because they're asserting their will in a certain way, too.
Absolutely.
Why are they wrong and you're right?
So are they conscious magicians? That'll be another way.
So I would argue that they are, that some of them are. Roger Ailes is the guy that basically was hired. He was Nixon's, I think, chief of staff and worked with Bush and Reagan, and then quit his job in politics and was hired on as the guy who would sort of construct Fox News as this very conservative mouthpiece. So Fox News, in my mind, has a very distinct political agenda. It is to reinforce the corporate masters that are essentially have seized control of our once democratic government. And they use every trick in the book to manipulate the masses.
But what's wrong with that?
Right. I mean, I think what Jeff is saying, you're assuming, you're right, they're wrong.
Absolutely.
Or,
right. So I think
we do the same thing. We're all involved in a mimetic.
Right. So
war.
You can get into this idea, and this is common in magic and very common in mysticism, especially Eastern paths of. Well, everybody has a right. Everybody is a being. If you want to do this, that's okay. If you want to do that, that's okay. I disagree with that.
I don't even necessarily say that. I just say, if you're going to say something's wrong, prove it. It's not necessarily that everybody has a right, but maybe they are wrong, but
so
show me how.
Do we need to prove it? I mean, like you said, it's a battle of wills. I believe in my will. I believe in my platform, and I'm going to do what I can to disseminate that out to the world.
Right, so it's a mimetic war in some sense. I mean, do you think, what's that secret society that Bush and Kerry...
Skull and Bones.
I mean, do you take all that stuff seriously? Do you think that these are just degenerate fraternities, or do you think there's some kind of perhaps wicked occult, real occult current?
I suspect a bit of both. I think for the most part it's a lot of business connections and fraternities, but I suspect that on some level they still maintain these rituals and this.
And what is the difference really between a tradition, an old school tradition, and a ritual? I mean, really?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. It's a ritual is just a technique to get you into a space of relating with the universe more closely.
And you guys don't do rituals where you shoot your friend in the face, I don't think.
No, not yet.
Hey, that's just a matter of preference, though. I think Jason, did you have something to say on this?
Yeah, let me jump in. This is my as I was saying earlier. There's kind of two ends to look at the spectrum. One is, like we were saying, okay, yeah, Roger Ailes is a magician if you look at it at a certain angle. Rupert Murdoch is a magician if you look at it from a certain angle, because they're able to wield the power of public perception to work their wills and change life on this planet. The other angle of that is, there are magical rituals, and there's the micro level of that where people are, doing, rituals that people are accustomed to. It's a bit more like Harry Potter, etc. I think that when you were saying, prove that Fox News is doing something wrong, prove it, et cetera, that's not the question for me. The question for me is, where's the balance? Because the situation we have in this country right now is...
They're fair and balanced. Yeah. It's their motto. Right? What more do you want?
They are fair and balanced, but the problem that we have in this country right now is that we have basically the right wing, and if you look at the Bush administration, the best magicians around right now are, the people on the right and the Bush administration and their propagandists, because they're able to tell everybody how to perceive reality. They're able to act and justify it after
right, but it's not working very well, actually.
Yeah, people are doubting their magic.
They may have, okay, great, it's falling back on them. The problem for me is not, not saying that evil, whatever. The problem is there's no balance. I don't think, the other elements, the more humanist elements of culture have caught on to these techniques.
What makes balance so desirable or universal, though?
What makes anything good?
Well, yeah, that's basically the question, because I thought that I read, in some places that, one of the sort of implications of magic is that it's amoral. It's however you define your morality is how you define it. So it's hard to hear people performing magic and coming out and saying that society should be one way or another.
But it doesn't seem like this administration's that interested in a kind of do what thou wilt, kind of philosophy. So
it's more my will.
I mean, the difference is one side.
That
is
just
trying
means that
to...
they're different than me. That doesn't make them wrong.
I think we can abstract this and intellectualize it. But at the end of the day, being people, living in communities, you know, taking advantage of the resources that the land provides us, living, breathing, sharing, loving, these are the goals. And these are the things that are important
are
to
goals.
People at the end. Well, I mean, not do you like the people in your life? Do you want them to do well?
Maybe
do
I do. I'm just representing well,
that's
no, devil's
actually,
advocate.
That's, the,
that's their magic. That's their form of magic. I mean, would you say that this that you're united in the idea that, I guess I'm asking two of you now, and asking generally about the people in the book. Are you united in the idea that your magic is towards the kinds of things that the Chris just spoke about?
Well, I can't speak for everybody in the book, but I think that if there's one underlying, if there's one underlying theme in that book, is that those techniques are for everybody, you know, right, left, whatever. They should be available for everybody to use. So once everybody, you know, is working their will in the world in an effective way, then, you know, we may start seeing something a little bit more interesting than, you know, a one-sided construction of reality where it's only the people with the guns and the money and the news stations that are able to, you know, create the reality that we all take for granted. So I would say, you know, yeah, like balance is favorable, and the way to do that is to throw these techniques out there for everybody to use.
There's a very vibrant, sort of trippy, youthful, excited energy in the book, and there's a lot of people talking about sort of being able to transform the world. And I mean, that's a really, you know, somewhere in Africa now, they're, you know, child soldiers chopping off each other's limbs and bawling in the streets with
what's
heads.
Wrong with that? Well, just kidding.
We're going to do a special interview. On what,
what's wrong with
we're
that?
We're going to do a special what's
yeah,
wrong with
nihilism,
that?
Nihilism, yeah.
You know, we've talked for several generations about sort of magically turning the world on in a very short time. And gets to be when you get older, I guess you get to be a little skeptical about it. Although, you know, who knows what'll happen on December 21st, 2012, mm-hmm. or whatever. But I mean, do you think that being young has something to do with the idea that of embracing the idea that you can make some kind of transmutation happen pretty quickly?
I think there's a lot of powerful idealism in youth where you can do things that might be impossible, or you think you can.
Right.
And that energy is very vital and important. As you mature, and I'd like to state right now that as far as, you know, bringing magic into a social political context, it's not about just, you know, wanking off to a sigil in your bedroom and that's it. You know, you got to vote. You got to watch how you spend your money. There's all these very practical things about being a responsible person in the modern world.
To some extent that this kind of magical activity does tend to replace like being politically active or inventing a technology, and maybe like people feel that they're powerless because, you know, like me, they're not good at inventing a technology or making a new science, so they can't really change the world, but I can imagine that I'm drawing down energy and in that way I'm changing
It only replaces it if you're not doing it right. If you're not adding those activities, and then also, just like Chris said.
Right.
I like that you're saying that you need to pay your bills and be practical, because
I think they need to pay my bills, actually.
I would vote for that, but I think that's called a cult, are you? Which we could look into starting. But I think.
A tax
that,
shelter.
Yes, a church.
Oh, you're lucky.
Okay, now I am digressing. But I think one of the things I find fault with a lot of mystical orders or magical practices is it seems that people completely abandon this plane, and we are here for better or worse.
Right, and that's a mistake, I think.
I would agree. Walking the wacky path, it just doesn't really serve in the end.
I think we're going to follow Diana here, and we're going to walk on the wacky path. But I think that we're actually running out of time. I do want to give Jason a final chance to just tell our listeners whatever you want to tell them about this book and why they should read it and where they can find it.
Let's see. You should read the book because it has the opinions of 13 different magicians, 13 or 14 different magicians, and not just myself and Chris, and because it's awesome.
I want to say that you have a really cool story about going to Nepal and sort of very spontaneously following a shaman for a period of time. But I'm sorry to interrupt.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm really hoping that Nepal calms down a little bit in the wake of the parliament being reinstated so I can go back. But I don't really have anything else to say other than you can check our website out at ultraculture.org. And I guess I'll leave the rest to Chris.
Chris, you have any final...
I'd like to just briefly, you know, the thing about magic to me, there, we can all argue about whether it works or not, or whether you can measure it on your, you know, particular device. What's important to me is that it gives me meaning, gives me context, empowers my ability to act in the world with integrity and responsibility, and makes me feel like I am in some way tending the light. And I think that's really critical, and that people in the modern day and age can get overwhelmed by the darkness and give into it. And that's where my belief comes in. My personal faith is just relating to reality and the universe and the absolute and creation, and trying to give it my energy in some way. I'm not going to change the world tomorrow, but I may contribute to the evolution of the world.
All right, I want to thank you. It looked like Diana was...
I just wanted to say thank you. That was great.
All right, I want to thank Jason and Chris both for coming in. I want to thank Chris particularly for breaking the right wing. I see it now, actually. I see that you're working.
Your listeners can send donations care of RU.
So. Absolutely, and we'll have a link on www.ruseriousradio.com to both their websites and to the book, which is available through Disinformation. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Love is the only weapon. Shit!
Are you serious?